from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I said briefly on yesterday's show that I don't really get into, like, the contract stuff all that much. I've been a sports fan my whole life, and obviously I'm used to coaches and players making millions of dollars. For the most part, I don't really know what anybody makes, you know, within – you know, a couple of million dollars. I probably couldn't guess anybody's salary from the NFL, the NBA, the Major League Baseball. I assume they all make a lot of money. For the most part, it's not my money. I don't really care. I'm not really into counting what's in other people's wallets. It's just not that interesting of a subject for me. That's even true for Georgia coach Kirby Smart. And I, as I said, I sort of briefly mentioned this yesterday. He was due to get his big contract extension, which we knew was going to come with a big raise. I think he's earned that money. I'm glad he's getting it. I hope he gets as much as he can. But for the most part, you know, it's not that interesting to me how much money Kirby Smart ends up making. As it turns out, he does sort of join that exclusive club, that $7 million club here, and that's a lot of money to make. And obviously, I think the overall takeaway here from a Georgia standpoint, what's interesting about a Georgia fan looking at Kirby Smart and his brand new contract, you know, 7-year, $49 million deal here, is that this is Georgia playing at a higher level than it's ever played at before. It wasn't that long ago that Georgia wasn't really, I think, paying market value for a lot of its coaches. You had assistant coaches making well less than what some of their colleagues were making at other schools. Georgia had no indoor facility. Georgia seemed to be, you know, trying to fight against the stream of, you know, what I think some might call out of control spending. Other people may say is just the cost of doing business in major college football. Georgia seemed to be kind of running against that. Now they are running with that tide here, and Georgia very much joining into that. And I guess, you know, there is an overall level of excitement about, hey, we've got a coach worth giving this kind of extension to. We've got a coach worth, you know, signing to some big contract and putting him up there, right there alongside the highest paid coaches in college football. That's what our guy's worth here, and there's some enthusiasm generated around that. And I couldn't help but notice what the five-star UGA recruit and commit Nolan Smith of the class of 2019 said in response to seeing the Kirby Smart contract. And the official Georgia account tweeted out, "We're not going anywhere." And the 7-year deal for Kirby Smart, the "we're not going anywhere," a reference to what Smart said at the end of the national championship game against Alabama back in January, and Georgia putting its money where its mouth is in that regard by giving Kirby the big extension. And then Nolan Smith jumps in there on Twitter and says, "I'm going to be here for 4 of those 7 years, so let's do something special. Hashtag go Dogs." And obviously what Smith says there, UGA fans will enjoy, because that's a guy who sounds very much in love with his Georgia commitment at the moment and sounds very excited about what the next 4 years are going to mean for Georgia. And I guess ultimately that's what all of this is about. It is Kirby Smart and his ability to bring in recruits. It's Kirby Smart and his sort of tireless energy to build a roster here that put Georgia in the college football playoff a year ago and put Georgia at the spot where it is here heading into the 2018 season, where it had to re-up Kirby Smart to big-time bucks for the future here. It is also kind of interesting to sort of look and see the category that Kirby Smart now finds himself in after this contract was signed. I thought that Stuart Mandel had an interesting tweet about this, and we briefly mentioned this on SEC Country Live yesterday. What Mandel writes is that college football's $7 million club now consists of 7 coaches. All of them hit that mark since 2016. You've got Nick Saban there, Dabo Swinney from Clemson, Urban Meyer at Ohio State, Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M, now Kirby Smart, along with Gus Malzahn. If we can leave up this, for those of you watching on video, let's leave the tweet up for a second here, because one of the things you can't help but notice on this list, and I guess here is the eyebrow-raising idea of this $7 million club. If I was the AD or the school president or the board of regents or whoever it is that sort of signs off on this kind of stuff, and I was in charge of paying these coaches the various schools, how many of these coaches would you really feel that good about paying $7 million to? Once again, for those of you listening, let me give you the names. It's Nick Saban, Dabo Swinney, Urban Meyer, Jim Harbaugh, Jimbo Fisher, Kirby Smart, and Gus Malzahn. I think we would all agree that $7 million for Nick Saban's a bargain. $7 million for Dabo Swinney may very well be a bargain, too, based on what he's built at Clemson 3 consecutive years in the college football playoff. I don't like Urban Meyer. I'd probably pay him the $7 million a season, though. Then you get the Jim Harbaughs, the Jimbo Fishers, the Gus Malzahns. All of them, I got to tell you, I'm not quite so sure I'd want to pay $7 million to. Jimbo, I probably would because he's won a national championship. Harbaugh, based on his results at Michigan, probably would not. Gus Malzahn, based on his results at Auburn, I guess I probably would sort of balk at the idea of paying $7 million for him here as well. So what's kind of interesting about that is that Kirby Smart joins a club that you would think would sort of put him in the sort of exclusive company of all college football coaches. But for the most part, about half the guys in that group, I think a lot of objective-minded college football fans may say, well, I'm not quite so sure they're worth the money they are being paid there. And I thought Brandon Walker, who worked with me yesterday on SEC Country Live in place of the vacationing Mike Johnson, brought up a good point. That one of the reasons why guys like Jimbo and Harbaugh are on that list is because they were paid money for their accomplishments at other schools. There was a desperate situation at Texas A&M that required them to bring in Jimbo Fisher. There was a desperate situation at Michigan that required them to bring in Jim Harbaugh. You can almost say that, you know, the big contract that Gus Malzahn has at Auburn was also, to a certain extent, brought about by desperation because Arkansas had come calling, and there was a thought that Malzahn may be ready to go back to his home state. So from that standpoint, Kirby Smart is unique in this $7 million club in that Georgia's not really in a desperate situation with him. He was an alumnus of the program who kind of came back home after the Mark Richt era had kind of gone the way that it went. And Georgia has had a chance to evaluate him over the last couple of years. And based on his accomplishments, not at some other school that you had to pay for, but at your own school, which you've watched blossom here, Georgia brings him in. So ultimately, the big contract for Kirby Smart, at least to me, seems like money well spent. And when you look into the future, you know, 5 years from now, do you really see any kind of reason why Georgia may one day regret giving that big deal to Kirby Smart? At this point, it seems like he's a lot more likely to join that Saban, Swinney, Meyer crowd than the Harbaugh, Malzahn, Jimbo Fisher crowd of guys who sort of maybe making more money than they probably should. The future seems bright for Kirby Smart at Georgia. I'm glad he got the money that he got, and I look forward to seeing how Georgia can leverage this for more wins on the recruiting trail in the months ahead. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Marco's Pizza, and we're glad you're with us today, no matter how you may be getting to the program, watching it on video, Dog Nation Facebook, Dog Nation YouTube, Dog Nation Twitter page. Of course, we're live at 10 a.m. on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We love being with our friends there in the Classic City and in podcast form, Apple Podcasts, Android devices, SoundCloud, the world-famous DogNation.com. We're just really, really glad you have found Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza today. And speaking of Marco's Pizza, as we head into the weekend, Marco's reminds you to kick off the weekend in primo style with Marco's. Right now you can get two medium, two topping pizzas for just an everyday low price of $7.99 each. You got to order from Marco's.com today, though. Go to Marco's.com. Great offer there and a great way to enjoy your weekend in primo style with our friends at Marco's Pizza. It is Jeff Sintel. A little bit later on, we will talk to him about some UGA recruiting stuff. A lot of really fun stuff to get into with Jeff Sintel on today's program. We'll do that in a couple of minutes. We'll also, in a few minutes, do our Kroger Click List checklist as we check in on a busy weekend for UGA athletics. Before we get to that, you know, we just talked about the Kirby Smart contract. Obviously, on this program and the people who watch and listen to this show, there's a sense of enthusiasm about what Georgia has when it comes to Kirby Smart. Skeptics may say, hey, what's he really proven over the course of the last couple of years? You know, a lot of guys look like good coaches over the last couple of years. But I think that Georgia right now feels like it's in pretty good hands with Smart at the helm, and that's one of the reasons why he's getting the big deal that he's getting. And one of the reasons why he's paid the big bucks that he's paid is because he has to navigate some tough decisions and you know, lead a program sometimes in a challenging way. And part of the challenges there is how you manage your roster in terms of the 85 guys you have on scholarship, who you put on those scholarships, you know, who makes up your depth chart, offense, defense, how do you get the best players on the field? And, you know, back during the spring when Kirby Smart dealt with the idea of lack of depth along the defensive line, one of the decisions that he made at the time was to take an offensive lineman from the class of 2016, slide him over to the defensive side of the ball since he wasn't getting a lot of work on offense. Let's try him on defense here. That man's name was Chris Barnes, and here is how Kirby Smart explained that at the time.
He's still learning where to line up. I mean, I'll be honest with you. We're so low numbers on the defensive line. We are extremely struggling at the defensive line from a depth standpoint. We got a lot of guys banged up and injured. But Chris has been over there. Unfortunate for him, he didn't get to go through a lot of the meetings in the offseason. I mean, he doesn't know what the words mean. He's playing really hard. But he's got to play with a better pad level. He's got to play lower, and that's really on us. We just haven't got a chance to work with him. But he has been very open because he knows it gives him an opportunity to contribute, and he's worked hard at it.
Yeah, tough situation there for a guy that Kirby Smart says some nice things about. He's working hard, trying to make that transition, but he didn't really have a home on the offensive line. Georgia had done some outstanding recruiting there at that position group. You move him over the defensive line, but over the course of one spring, you're just not going to have that technique down yet, and Georgia hadn't had really time to work with him and teach him how defensive line is going to be different from offensive line. And, you know, maybe when cooler heads have a chance to prevail and you really look around, Chris Barnes decides, hey, maybe my best chance of playing is to actually go somewhere else. In fact, that is the decision that Chris Barnes has announced. He put this up on his Instagram account that, you know, he's grateful for everything and everything that everyone's done for him. But he is going to continue his football career somewhere else. He says, I haven't made a decision on where I'm going to continue my football career, but I'm eager to explore all options. And I'll say the same thing about Barnes that I've said about a couple of guys already this offseason. I hope he finds himself a great home. I hope he finds himself a great chance to play. I think players deserve a chance to play, and I think they deserve a program that's a perfect fit for him. It sounds like right now Barnes and Georgia weren't a great fit for each other, but, man, I wish him well as he moves on to the next phase of his football career. My guess is we'll hear some good things from him on a new campus here in the very near future. So best of luck to Chris Barnes as he moves on from the Georgia program. And we'll see now for Georgia defensive line with Barnes out of the mix, how, you know, the expected incoming graduate transfer Jay Hayes and the, you know, the summer arrivals, at least of Jordan Davis, maybe of Tramell Wathor. We'll see how they kind of factor into this conversation here also. Before we bring on Jeff Sintel, let me do a little bit of recruiting stuff as a sort of a setup for the conversation we're going to have with Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, in just a moment. I thought that Chris Kirshner, our colleague from SEC Country, who covers Alabama recruiting, had a really interesting and provocative quote from Kevin Harris, one of the Grayson Four, so to speak, from this past week, who in Atlanta at that sports bar made his college decision to announce Alabama. But at one point in time, Harris was very much in the mix for Georgia. That seemed to change. Georgia seemed to slow down its recruitment of Harris. And Harris, on the heels of committing to Alabama, told Kirshner that he still has Georgia on his mind. If you're watching on video, you can see the quote. If you're not, I'll read it for you. He says, Harris, about committing to Alabama when he plays Georgia, I want to beat them badly. They're going to really feel me for sure. I have a bone to pick with Georgia. I feel at peace with Alabama now, though. I really do. Alabama's getting a hard worker who's dedicated to learning the game, improving, and just as a team player. I want to be a coach on that field. I want to do what it takes to win. So Kevin Harris there, the Grayson High School teammate, a five-star linebacker, Owen Papo, saying that he's got a bone to pick with Georgia and wants to beat them badly because Georgia sort of stopped recruiting him on the heels of when he was about to make his decision. He's now in Alabama, happy about that, but still a little upset at Georgia. And I guess I saw some comments at the forum, which you can go to at forum, at forum.dognation.com, where people were sort of making it sound like Georgia had made a misevaluation of Harris, and that it was wrong for Kirby Smart to, I guess for lack of a better phrase, slow play Harris here, you know, a few months ago, now where he's at Alabama. Maybe it looks like Kirby Smart made a mistake here. But it's important to point out the difference between Georgia and Alabama when it comes to Harris's position at outside linebacker. Georgia had big wins for the recruiting class of 2018 with guys like Brenton Cox and Adam Anderson. Georgia's got a great guy in the fold here for 2019 in Nolan Smith. It's not my job here or my intention to disparage Kevin Harris, who very well may be a very good player at the college level. But had Alabama gotten Brenton Cox and Adam Anderson and Nolan Smith, its evaluation of Harris would probably be different than it is now, and it would actually probably be very similar to what Georgia's is when it comes to Harris. The fact of the matter is that's a lot of elite talent at one position, and that sort of changes the priorities you have for other guys there. So I'm not going to criticize Georgia for how it recruited Harris, and the idea that you know, Georgia extended an offer but it wasn't committable. Georgia's not unique in that regard. That's just the way the college football works right now. Words have a tendency to mean things differently now than they maybe used to, or maybe how outsiders to the view of college football recruiting might think they mean. This is not, a reason to criticize Georgia, but we will ask Jeff Sintel about this when he joins us in just a moment. Obviously, Kevin Harris, a little bit upset with the Bulldogs. Before we bring on Jeff Sintel here on this Dog Nation Daily on a Friday. Let me also take a moment to update our Kroger Click List checklist and a busy weekend for UGA athletics here. It actually started last night, Diamond Dogs in Columbia, Missouri, to take on the Tigers. UGA wins last night on the road against Missouri, so they get the weekend started well. They will play again today and then tomorrow on Friday and Saturday here for the Diamond Dogs at Missouri as UGA baseball back hot again here and looking pretty good, including on the road at Missouri last night. The softball team also on the road against Ole Miss here. That's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series for the softball team at Ole Miss. And then next week, the women's golf team for UGA will start its NCAA regional. So that'll begin next week. That's our Kroger Click List checklist. We do it every Friday here on our Dog Nation Daily. And speaking of Kroger, they remind you to let the celebration begin with custom cakes, party platters, and more to celebrate your grad. Just visit Kroger.com/graduation or your local Kroger, Atlanta Kroger today to start planning your graduation celebrations. And we love doing the Kroger Click List checklist every Friday here on Dog Nation Daily. We also love talking to Jeff Sintel. Busy time for UGA recruiting. Let's do a little bit of that right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
A lot to get to with Jeff Sintel here today. We'll try to cram as much of it as we can into the time that we are allowed. Jeff, I guess let me first of all say good morning to you. Thanks for being here with us on the program. I know it's been a busy week for you as you've been chasing stories all over the place. You've had some absolutely fascinating stuff up at DogNation.com. Thanks for making some time for us here on this Friday.
Yes, sir, Brandon. We got a busy week. It's kind of like the NBA playoffs. So I get the feeling I'm going to be on a 24-word or 2-sentence shot clock with you right now for the daily.
Yeah, that may be right, although your words are always very important to us when you join us in the program. And let me start with you where I just sort of left off before you joined us. Kevin Harris, pretty provocative quote, the 4-star linebacker from Grayson to Chris Kirchner at SEC Country, upset with Georgia about the almost commitment, at least from Harris's perspective, almost commitment to UGA. Did Georgia make a mistake in how it recruited Kevin Harris, either in terms of the talent evaluation or the miscommunication about the ability to commit to the offer that was out there?
Wow, that might be a 30-for-30 series one day, Brandon, especially with all those guys at Grayson. I just look at that, man, as an example of how, forgive the metaphor here, but sometimes the recruiting can get bat poop crazy. Are we allowed to say bat poop crazy on the daily? Is that allowed?
I think you just did, Jeff. I think you just did.
Okay, bat poop crazy. But Kevin Harris, it's such a weird world where, like, a top 10, top 100 prospect, when it's time for him to commit, they got all these offers from all the elites, but all the elite schools maybe have 3 or 4 names at the very top of their list, and maybe they want those 3 or 4 names to be vetted before they go down the list, even just a little bit to number 8, 9, 10 in the country. That's just it's just a different world that people look at. But I go back to that Kevin Harris story, and phenomenal talent now, but coming out of his sophomore year, he did not play a lot at Grayson on that state championship team with Jamias Williams and D'Angelo Gibbs, but he was coming out. He had a great showing in this spring practice that year. He started flashing on the camp circuits a little bit. He was becoming a name, but he really wasn't, okay, this guy's going to be something. And I think Kevin Harris, 6'4", 245 one day when he's in college, he comes off the edge really fast. Physical player, probably going to run a 10-9 in the 100. So he's just an incredible prospect. But at the time, he's a guy that hadn't had a lot of game film yet. Georgia's obviously shooting for the moon with all the top players. They already had Nolan Smith committed. Aziz Ojulari was on the verge of committing. Then you've got they were still chasing after Brenton Cox and Adam Anderson. And I know this kind of feels like playing in the sandbox or alternate reality, bizarro recruiting, but let's just look at Alabama accepting his commitment this week. I think that becomes a process where Alabama and Georgia were going after Brenton Cox and Adam Anderson last year. Nolan Smith was a guy that Alabama is still trying to flip away from Georgia. And yet if those guys, like let's say Cox and Anderson, commit to Alabama, I don't think Alabama's in the market for a defensive end right now in this class with other needs, because they have to go get Kevin Harris. So sometimes, and this is a reality Dog fans and Dog Nation is going to have to get used to, sometimes the five stars they take now, where you would say five star in the hand, two in the bush or whatever, sometimes the five stars they take now, see Owen Papo is a great example, limit them in the five stars they want for the next year down the road.
So I think you're right about that. Let me try to ask you sort of a two-pronged follow-up to that, just to sort of, you know, further this conversation a little bit more. I said before you joined us that I was a little disappointed with some of the comments at our forum at forum.dognation.com from some UGA fans who were sort of acting like Georgia had done something wrong here, when what it really seems like is, with no disrespect to Harris, that Georgia was just recruiting higher-rated outside linebacker prospects for the class of 2018 and 2019. Is that true, or is this a situation where Georgia misevaluated Harris initially and tried to play catch-up too late on him kind of after the fact here?
Well, I guess it's kind of it's just one of those stories that's unfortunate. Player likes Georgia. Player was getting recruited by Georgia. Player was had an offer from Georgia, saw the need to commit, and maybe the school wasn't ready. And, I mean, that's a culture. I hope we get a little bit of that exposed or shared through all of our conversations here, Brandon. These commitments are – these offers, to begin with, are sort of like now the way to say, hey, we're really interested and we're really going to start recruiting you. What has to happen after that is an evaluation by the staff. Usually that takes place in a camp setting or evaluation in spring practice. And what you have to do from that initial offer is start building a relationship where the school feels good and the player and family feels good about the school. And that's a situation where sometimes with these elite programs like Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, that doesn't happen right away. It just doesn't. I mean, so when Kevin Harris was going through this process, I don't think Georgia was ready to accept his commitment, and that's going to lead to some ill will there. That's going to lead to some animosity there. And if you just look at it strictly from the top down, Kevin Harris probably in anybody's book is one of the top 100 players, maybe the top 60, top 50 players in the country. But was he better than a lot of those names Georgia was looking at defensive end, yep, at the time? You also got to remember there's a guy named Stephen Harris Jr. who's also in Kentucky, who is a guy Georgia was viably invested in and already recruiting hard as well at that time. And Heron's a guy that's now committed to Michigan. So there were a lot of guys, a lot of those elite guys, Georgia just weren't sure about which ones they wanted,
yep,
other than Nolan Smith. And let's look at this thing. This is a thread we haven't even kind of dusted off yet, Brandon. If Georgia accepts that commitment from Kevin Harris, you remember how this time last summer, this time right around the opening, last summer, how the Nolan Smith commitment was a little bit in doubt. I would say more than a little bit in doubt.
Great point.
And wonder if Kevin Harris, which led us to today, and maybe costs or singes a relationship with Nolan Papo. I wonder if Georgia fans have the foresight to sit there and think and wonder, does Kevin Harris end up costing Georgia Nolan Smith?
Yeah, that's a great point, Jeff. That is a really good sort of look at what I sort of sometimes think of four-dimensional chess when it comes to some of these recruiting decisions. And let me also piggyback off something else you almost alluded to there was, does your word animosity that Harris felt towards Georgia, how much does that sort of bleed over and impact the decision that five-star linebacker and teammate of Harris, Owen Papo, made this week?
Yeah, I'm just going to really rely on sourcing a lot right there. I know Kenyatta Watson told me that he thought it made a difference. He thought it really bothered Owen that the way Georgia handled the Kevin Harris situation. And I think the thing to also with this, I love your term there, Brandon, four-dimensional chess, maybe five-dimensional chess with an infinity gauntlet on the side. What's happening here is a situation. You got to remember, these are high school kids. Typically high school kids. Now their lives are exposed and they're quasi celebrities and have little shreds of fame because of their internet famous because they have all these star rankings and everybody follows them on Twitter. But traditionally most high school relationships, when unrequited love, whatever happens, usually doesn't go well.
Yeah, you're that's pretty well said there. What did you make of what Kenyatta Watson Sr., who's obviously a pretty influential advisor here and a guy that you wrote a pretty interesting piece about at dognation.com, and I'll invite everybody to read that if they haven't. Obviously, as you know, Jeff, he's controversial in some, you know, circles, which is one of the main reasons why you wrote the piece of Dog Nation that you did. But near the end of that piece, Watson predicts that he thinks Papo eventually flips back to Georgia before all this is done. What did you make of the somewhat controversial Watson saying this may all end up good for Georgia with Owen Papo before it's all said and done? Your take on all of that?
Yeah, that's a tremendous – talk about another 30 for 30 story. Okay, at the hard set, I think Kenyatta Watson Sr., a lot of people view him because they read headlines regarding Grayson High School getting all the players. People look at Grayson this year and they see all these players. I think Kenyatta Watson told me he thinks 18 guys will sign Power 5. 40 will sign somewhere at some level of college football in this class. Well, it's really no different than the way things were a couple of years ago when guys like Breon Dixon and Jamias Williams and D'Angelo Gibbs, more players on top of that, they all joined an already strong Grayson roster to win a state title. But this is not high school recruiting. That is a blog for another day. We're talking about college recruiting and what Kenyatta Watson has done since being a very influential and a very known face around youth football in Gwinnett County, around a lot of these summer tournaments and 7-on-7s, these Adidas camps. Kenyatta Watson has been there, and a lot of smart families that can kind of know what passes the sniff test and what doesn't pass the sniff test have grown to know Kenyatta Watson very well. If you just saw on Twitter when all that story came out, the reason why I wrote that is kind of always to try to inform and serve our readers and our readership here and our coverage base. And they wanted to know what's going on with Grayson. And I shared several stories that I've seen with my own eyes and observed over the years. Several things to me which tell me that Kenyatta Watson is not steering any players anywhere. A lot of the theories about Under Armour schools and AAU basketball start creeping into the discussion here. But I think he saw once the story went out, and sometimes people don't read the story or follow the click or whatever. They just follow the Twitter headline or whatever. But a lot of people thought that maybe Georgia fans and why Georgia fans should think that Kenyatta Watson is steering Grayson High School athletes away from the University of Georgia. And what became of that, especially on Twitter, was a lot of guys, and I'm talking who's who guys. You're talking about Travon Walker, Jaden Hazelwood, Nolan Smith, Owen Papo himself, Kenyatta Watson II, his son. I mean, on and on and on. You can just have a list of top 2019 prospects that all did Kenyatta Watson a solid, vouched for him and said, Kenyatta Watson has helped me, and Kenyatta Watson has never said a disparaging word about any school at any time. The only thing that he's biased toward is these young people getting a free education and getting away from those student loans, and that he has been immensely successful at doing. When he tells me that he's helped at least 1,500 to 2,000 players over the 4 or 5 years he's really been in the college recruiting world, I have to agree with him. I think it is that high. I think that number is approaching that high at least.
Let me follow up on that subject, and after this we're going to change away from Owen Papo and talk about two linebackers that Georgia may be chasing and one linebacker Georgia already has, so we'll do that coming up in a moment. But let me follow up on this Papo subject with one more thought. And, Jeff, I know this is going to come across as like sour grapes, and I do realize that I should have listened to the online chatter about, you know, Papo picking Auburn earlier this week, and obviously I tried to swim against that stream and ended up, you know, looking dumb for doing so. But to me, the Papo to Auburn thing just seems incredibly weird, given the fact that that's virtually the only, like, legitimate recruiting momentum that they have. Now, I know they've gotten some other commits and are expected to get a couple more, but these are not the kind of same commits that, you know, Alabama and Georgia are chasing down on a typical basis. Even Nick Harvey, the graduate transfer defensive back from Texas A&M, chose South Carolina over Auburn this week. Wanya Morris chose Tennessee over Auburn. The Papo thing to Auburn, maybe it's just a short-term deal here, but it just seems weird given the fact that that's the only kind of like five-star momentum Auburn seems to even have at the moment.
Yeah, that's true. I think, you know, the four-star cornerback, Jalen Simpson from South Georgia, his commitment was probably trying to add to the momentum there. And then most folks out there in the recruiting business feel that his teammate and close friend, Jashaun Sheffield, will also eventually join the fold at Auburn as well. And you hear Owen also saying that he's going to go after guys like Andrew Booth now. He's going to go after guys like Wanya Morris. That'll be a, things get very interesting moment there with Auburn. You know, I've gotten this question, or people have asked me this a lot. The one thing that I just don't have the answer to, fellas, ladies and gentlemen, is with all this Owen Papo stuff, some people have contacted me and said the part that really bothered them about the whole situation, they wish Owen the best, they wish him good things and find the best fit and do Owen. But the one thing that bothers some folks is they sit there and they saw some of our coverage from the Elite 11 where he said, you know, he had the Georgia backpack and he had the Georgia windbreaker on. And he said something like, Georgia coaches know how I feel. Don't believe the media. If they didn't hear it from me, it's just the media. And then when we kind of do the autopsy on the decision, he'd been silently committed to Auburn for at least 2 months. That's something that I can see where fans act fanatical about this, because remember the root of fan is actually fanatical or fanatic. But that's something that I know a lot of Georgia fans noticed, the fact that Owen said those things when in reality he'd been committed to Auburn for quite some time.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, Jeff. All right, let me change the subject here. Other inside linebackers, a lot of Georgia fans excited about these names. You got N'Kobe Dean from Mississippi. There's online chatter about an upcoming additional visit for Dean back here to UGA. Brandon Smith's a good-looking prospect from the state of Virginia. How does the Papo decision influence Georgia now, maybe chasing guys like Smith and Dean a little harder here?
Interesting points there, Brandon. Let's talk about a few things. Let's look at a big picture and then small picture. Big picture there is I think Georgia will be limited in the amount of scholarships they have for 2019. A school like Alabama is probably going to sign 27, 26 guys. I think Georgia will probably only be able to sign 20, 21, 22, 23, somewhere in that range. And why I range it that way is going to be dependent on a lot of juniors, third-year juniors for Georgia, being able to declare early for the draft and create spots in the class. Because if you look, Georgia only has – we had a scholarship breakdown story on the site yesterday. Georgia only has 16 seniors, and that's including the incoming graduate transfer, Jay Hayes, for this class, which means, all right, at the outset, 16 scholarships will free themselves. Will there be more attrition, guys like Julio Le Guin, Chris Barnes, Patrick Allen? Will that more things like that happen? Will more juniors in the class? Georgia has some viable juniors, J.R. Reed, Julian Rochester, Tyler Clark, yada, 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 Isaac Nauta. So how many of those guys have good fortune in 2018 might lead to that class getting bigger and bigger and bigger? So that was the big view. Now here's the small view. The small view is maybe Owen Papo's decision means Georgia, maybe they don't target a third inside linebacker in 2019. Maybe they stick with the two good ones they have there in Tresman Marshall and J.D. Bertrand. Of course, guys like N'Kobe Dean and Brandon Smith are the guys no program in their right mind will turn down, especially at this stage of their recruiting and evaluation. Maybe Georgia taking three inside linebackers is a must. Maybe it's not. They'll learn the answers to those questions by what players really pop in the 2018 season.
Yeah, that's interesting. Speaking of Tresman Marshall, we'll finish with this, Jeff. We haven't really had a chance to talk too much about him yet, but his commitment to UGA should not be overshadowed by anything that Owen Papo has done this week. Marshall is a real need for Georgia and a great gift for Georgia, sort of independent of any other player that joins this 2019 class. A big-time addition here from Clinch County. Your thoughts on Marshall? We haven't had a chance to talk about that yet.
Yeah, Marshall, huge thumper, downhill linebacker, played some quarterback, running back, wants to play, dabble a little tailback, two-way duty for the Bulldogs in Athens. About 235, viable Alabama prototype-like inside backer. Down south, Georgia boy, which probably adds an extra 20 pounds to his bench press and power clean right there by just saying that, by that Georgia red play in his DNA, but great get. A top 100 player. I mean, he's rated as an athlete because he dabbles in all those things on his high school film. but he's also a championship player. He's already been a part of two Class A state championships down there in Clinch County. Has liked Georgia for a while, and I know people wonder about the timing and master PR strategization by Kirby Smart here. Tresman had been committed silently for Georgia, I think, since the first week of May, and then kind of beyond that, prior to that, Tresman had also really liked Georgia a lot. He almost committed to Georgia last August, right before Chauncey Monak transferred out to community college to find a better path for him to his football dreams. So Tresman's a guy. Everybody's going to get used to this guy because he's going to lay some big hits. And you keep looking at that inside linebacker spot, you're talking about another top 100 player, top 80, 85 player in the class of 2019.
Yeah, that's a big-time addition. Jeff, you've had some great stuff at DogNation.com in the last couple of days, some really, really fascinating stuff. And, I had a chance to watch some of your video work this week as well, including Before the Hedge with Hannah Chalker and the Wednesday night conversation brought to you by Kroger. It's all been really good. And over the course of the next few days, when you're back on the show, I want to unpack some more of this with you. We appreciate you kind of going through all of this with us today, though. We hope you get ready to enjoy a great weekend, and we'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Hey, Brandon, I hope that Jaden Hazelwood story last night helps you calm some nerves a little bit about that guy and how solid he is to Georgia.
Jeff, it did. Now, I wish we had more time to talk about that. I love how solid he is to UGA. I love the video that you had embedded in there. He also talked a lot about a Trey Sanders there in that piece, which I thought was really interesting. Folks, go read that over the weekend. And, Jeff, when you come back on Tuesday for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all, we'll talk to you some more about that. How does that sound?
Yes, sir, guys. Everybody have a great weekend.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, we always go a little long with Jeff as it is. And on a day like this, even when you go long with Jeff, you really don't even scratch the surface on everything I wanted to talk to him about, because I did want to do the Jaden Hazelwood stuff with him. And he had a piece with Jaden up, and it's great. But it's one of those things, I don't want to cram it into 90 seconds because you end up missing some of the stuff that there really is to get there. You come away from the Jaden Hazelwood piece from Jeff feeling like it is a super solid commitment, much the same way you feel about another five-star guy who's taking his visits, Nolan Smith. You don't have any reason to be too worried about those guys if you're Georgia fans right now, but that's too juicy of content to sort of like cram into the end of what's already a pretty wide-ranging interview given the more controversial news from earlier this week. Jeff also said something about Tyson Campbell on his Wednesday show. I was watching some of that. Jeff made the point that he thinks that Campbell may end up being a star at Georgia, not a superstar, but a fifth defensive back star at Georgia, and I want to talk to him about that at some point in time. So there's a lot to get to with Jeff. It's going to be a busy summer here on Dog Nation Daily. As I say all the time, there is a reason we do this show every single day, even during the offseason, because there is always a lot to get to. Hope you'll join us Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for SEC Country Live and the SEC Country video channels. Mike Johnson will be back from his brief weekend vacation, and we'll do a lot of the SEC stuff there on Monday again. Let me squeeze in a couple of pieces of SEC news here right now, including our buddy Bill Bender from Sporting News. And Bill's a guy we've had on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza before. He's got his ranking up of the 25 best quarterbacks in college football for 2018, and there are several SEC names on the list. Let me run through the SEC names, and then we'll kind of get to my overall takeaway on it. You see Jake Fromm on your screen there. He does have Fromm at number three on his list, third best quarterback in the sport for this upcoming season. He's got Tua ahead of him at number two. He's got Drew Locke at number seven, who Mel Kiper this week said is going to be a first-round draft pick. Jared Stidham at nine. Jalen Hurts at 11. Nick Fitzgerald from Mississippi State at 12, and Jake Bentley from South Carolina at 17. This is going to come across as a very homerish statement, but I got to say it again. Are we sure that Tua Tagovailoa is better than Jake Fromm? Because, look, ranking Fromm 3 to a 2 is not some great level of disrespect to Fromm, but let's not act like just because you played well in one half of one national championship game, that's somehow supposed to overshadow what for Fromm was a spectacular freshman season. Not just throwing the football, although when Fromm threw it, he was deadly accurate. And it's also the way that he led the offense, checking in and out of running plays, moving from a left side run to a right side run. This is a guy that really understood the offense. And Fromm made it look easy, something that's not as easy as Fromm made it appear to be. So I think that it's a nice compliment to Fromm to have him as one of the three best quarterbacks in the sport. But to say that Tua's better than him because Tua happened to win a game that he played, you know, a half of against Georgia, that may be a bit of recency bias there. Would I take Tua and Fromm over Locke and Stidham and the rest of these SEC quarterbacks? I'd certainly probably, you know, lean in the direction of Fromm there, although I may go Jared Stidham over Drew Locke. I've said before, last time I saw Derek Dooley, he looked like a clown wearing orange pants on the sideline for Tennessee. Am I thinking that guy's going to be the kind of offensive coordinator from Missouri that's going to put Drew Locke in the first round? I'm not sure that I think that I do. Mark Schlabaugh, the ESPN analyst, goes on WJOX, which is a sports radio station in Birmingham, this week. And he made a pretty interesting statement about the brand-new coach there at Mississippi State, Joe Moorhead. And one of the reasons why he thinks that Moorhead may be successful at Mississippi State is because of what happened at Penn State. And I'm not an expert on the recent history of Penn State, so I was a little bit – this was new information to me. But what Moorhead said – and I'm getting this from Saturday Down South, what Schlabaugh said about Moorhead via Saturday Down South from the WJOX interview, and hopefully you're following all that. He says, I think if Joe Moorhead hadn't coached at Penn State, James Franklin wouldn't still be the head coach at Penn State. He saved James Franklin's job. And then Saturday Down South gives us some of the numbers here that the record for Penn State got way better once Joe Moorhead came on board there, which is pretty interesting. You know, ultimately, am I high on a brand new coach like that who was most recently an offensive coordinator? I don't know that I am, but it's a pretty interesting take from Schlabaugh there on the radio show. We'll also close up with this. USA Today has its SEC post-spring preview up. They call Alabama the SEC favorite, South Carolina the SEC dark horse, and Vanderbilt the league's worst team. I don't think Vanderbilt's going to be the worst team in the SEC this season. I think that's probably going to be Arkansas. South Carolina is a dark horse. I can somewhat buy that. I do think they're a top 25 team, even though some of these preseason rankings don't have the Gamecocks in there. I understand why you'd call Alabama the favorite. They are obviously the reigning national champion. Let's not forget, though, when it comes to the SEC hardware, that's in Athens, Georgia right now. And while Alabama may have won the most recent head-to-head matchup back in January, I'm not so sure Alabama's the SEC favorite is quite as clear-cut as USA Today seems to describe it as. But for now, we'll make that your SEC throw. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, let me transition back to UGA here fully for a moment and kind of follow up on something we talked about yesterday. I've been somewhat fascinated by the ongoing discussion about a potential renewal of Georgia's rivalry with Clemson. This starts because of a Clemson insider question to Dabo Swinney, or actually it's a Clemson insider recording of an answer that Dabo Swinney gave to a fan question at one of his spring/summer speaking tour events. Would you like to play Georgia? Dabo Swinney says, you bet I'd like to play Georgia. And went into some pretty significant, you know, detail about why it is he thinks that Georgia and Clemson ought to be playing more often. And then Greg McGarrity, the Georgia athletic director, was quoted in the Athens Banner-Herald story as saying, yeah, we would like to do more of this. We'd like to see these two teams get together. Well, now Clemson insider's back at it, talking to the Clemson athletic director, Dan Radakovich, about this Georgia-Clemson series. And what we find out from Radakovich is that there actually has been some legitimate, real-live conversations about this. Radakovich says, according to the Clemson insider, Greg and I, that's Georgia athletic director Greg McGarrity, actually texted back and forth today. And like he said, we're looking to try to get a game together here shortly. Now, shortly is defined inside of college football scheduling shortly, so we're looking to do that. I think there is a desire to play on both sides' parts, as Coach Dabo Swinney has talked about it, and even Kirby Smart has said so as well. So that's Dan Radakovich saying, yeah, we've actually been talking about doing this. And one of the things that I think is kind of cool about this is, A, I loved the Georgia-Clemson rivalry from the 80s. I talked about that yesterday. So this excites me from that regard. What also seems to excite me on this is, it almost seems like the work of these two athletic directors here is in response to a conversation that was seemingly started by fans, whether it be Clemson fans or Georgia fans. There's this sort of like ground, you know, level support for these two teams playing again, and it seems like the athletic directors are responding to that, which is kind of a cool thing to me. I think we're heading for a big-time change in college football. I think tougher schedules are going to be the norm. High-profile out-of-conference games to go along with a deep conference schedule, that to me is what every team is going to be playing in the future. And for Georgia, there may be room for instead of an either-or scenario with out-of-region games or in-region games, southern opponents versus Midwestern, far western, northeastern opponents, it may be a both-and situation here in the future, which is kind of exciting. However, I did want to mention this while we're on the subject here. I made a pretty strong point yesterday that not only would I like to see a sort of a brief renewal of the Georgia-Clemson series, I'd potentially like to see Georgia and Clemson play every year. My point here is, if they're going to battle this much in recruiting, and these two schools are going to battle, then why not battle on the field here as well? Clemson has arrived as a power. You might as well acknowledge that and take them down a peg or two by beating them more head-to-head. I even went so far as to say that if I was in charge of Georgia scheduling, that's the permanent ACC rival I'd like to see Georgia play. And at this point in time, I'm not quite sure what Georgia gets out of playing Georgia Tech every single year. It is worth noting, though, that not everybody who listened to the show yesterday agreed with me on this subject. Imagine that. There were a couple of comments, not to our Facebook Live broadcast, but a couple of people who, when the show was posted on DogNation.com, dropped in their comments. Ray Averett says, Georgia-Clemson pays off more for Clemson than it ever will for Georgia. I think the game's a great idea, 2 out of every 8 years. Other than that, we should try and roll other national teams through the schedule, which is a fair point to make. Georgia-Notre Dame last year was certainly a lot of fun. Keith Summers somewhat agrees, saying, I have very little interest in playing Clemson. I hate going up there because it's such a dysfunctional place. I mean, odd numbers on one row and even numbers on the next. I will give Dabo credit. He has them playing top-level ball for the first time in school history. I'd rather play some other teams around the nation, play Clemson twice a decade, but play Georgia Tech every single year until they want out of the series. So that's a couple of people at least expressing a bit of skepticism about a Georgia-Clemson rivalry. I understand where that's coming from. I enjoyed going to South Bend a year ago. I'm excited about Georgia's upcoming scheduled trip to UCLA. I like playing these national games against national brands. I'd like to see Michigan, Texas, Ohio State sprinkled in the mix there as well. There may be room for both, and in the future, I think those are the kinds of schedules that all college football teams are going to play. All right, as we get ready to wrap up here, I hope you're getting ready for a great weekend. I think the weather's supposed to be nice pretty much everywhere around the South anyway. Certainly in the state of Georgia, we're heading for some nice weather, so enjoy yourself, whatever you're doing. And our buddy Eddie here on the desk reminds me to tell you that 176 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville, world's largest outdoor cocktail party, where we think the weather's going to be pretty good there as well, and we think that Georgia's going to be floored again. It's our Gator Hater Countdown every single day here on Dog Nation Daily, brought to you by Marco's Pizza. A couple other things to remind you as we get ready to get out of here. There was a great story from Ben Kercheval at CBSSports.com about how he would rank the college football coaches. He sort of does it by tiers, not just ranking the coaches 1 through 130. That's a pretty fun topic. We're probably going to do something on that next week. Good stuff from Kercheval there at CBS. And next week I'll be telling you about how you can win yourself one of these Dog Nation Retaliation t-shirts. We've got a lot to give away. We'll talk about it next week. Y'all enjoy the weekend.